Chapter 15. The small Beechcraft executive jet touched down with a faint squeal from the tires and taxied off the crushed rock runway of a privately owned airport 20 kilometers south of Alexandria, Egypt. Less than a minute after it rolled to a halt beside a green Volvo with taxi lettered on the doors in English, the whine from the engine ceased and the passenger door raised open. The man that stepped to the ground was wearing a white suit with matching tie over a dark blue shirt. Slightly under 6 feet, with a slim body, he paused a moment and dabbed a handkerchief around a receding hairline, and then smugly brushed a large black mustache with one forefinger. His eyes were hidden by dark glasses and his hands covered by white leather gloves. Suleiman Aziz Amar did not resemble in the slightest the pilot who had boarded Flight 106 in London. He walked over to the Volvo and greeted the short, muscular driver who emerged from behind the wheel. "Good morning, Ibn. Find any problems on your return?" "Your affairs are in good order," Ibn replied, opening the rear door and making no effort to conceal a pistolized shotgun in a shoulder holster. "Take me to Yazid." Ibn nodded silently as Amar settled into the rear seat. The exterior of the taxi was as deceptive as Amar's many disguises. The darkly tinted windows and body panels were bulletproof. Inside, Amar sat in a low, comfortable leather chair in front of a compact desk cabinet containing a compact array of electronics that included two telephones, a computer, radio transmitter, and TV monitor. There were also a bar and a rack with two automatic rifles. As the car skirted the crowded central section of Alexandria and turned onto the Al Jaish Beach Road, Amar busied himself by monitoring his far-flung investment operations. His wealth, known only to him, was enormous. His financial success was accomplished more by ruthlessness than shrewdness. If any corporate executive or government official stood in Amar's way on a profitable business deal, he was simply eliminated. At the end of a 20-kilometer drive, Ibn slowed the Volvo and stopped at a gate leading up to a small villa squatting on a low hill overlooking a wide sandy beach. Amar shut down the computer and stepped from the car. Four guards in desert sand-colored fatigues surrounded him and efficiently searched his clothing. As a backup safeguard, he was directed to walk through an airport-type X-ray detector. He was then led up a stone stairway to the villa, past crudely built concrete compounds manned by a small army of Yazid's elite bodyguards. Amar smiled as they bypassed the ornate front archway, open to honored visitors, and entered through a small side door. He brushed off the insult, knowing it was Yazid's shallow-minded way of humbling those who did his dirty work, but were not accepted to his inner circle of fanatic grovelers. He was ushered into a stark and empty room furnished with only one wooden stool and a large Persian kashan carpet that hung from one wall. The interior was hot and stuffy. There were no windows, and the only illumination came from an overhead skylight. Without a word, the guards retreated and closed the door. Amar yawned, casually held up his wristwatch as if checking the time. Next, he removed his dark glasses and rubbed his eyes. The practiced gestures enabled him to locate the tiny lens of a TV camera within the design of the hanging carpet without giving his discovery away. He stewed for nearly an hour before the carpet was pulled aside, and Ahmad Yazid strutted through a small archway into the room. The spiritual leader of the Egyptian Muslims was young, no more than 35. He was a small man. He had to look up to meet Amar's eyes. His face did not have the precise features of most Egyptians. The chin and cheekbones were softer, more rounded. His head was covered by a white lace cloth wound in an abbreviated turban, and his broom-handle-thin body was draped in a white silk kaftan. When moving from shadow to light, his eyes seemingly altered from black to dark brown. As a sign of respect, Amar gave a slight nod without looking Yazid in the eye. "Ah, my friend," Yazid said warmly, "good to have you back." Amar looked up, smiled, and began playing the game. "I'm honored to stand in your presence, Ahmad Yazid." "Please sit," Yazid said. It was an order rather than an invitation. Amar complied, sitting on the small wooden stool so Yazid could look down on him. Yazid also added another form of humiliation. He circled the room as he lectured without prologue, forcing Amar to twist around the stool to follow him. Every week brings a major challenge to President Hassan's fragile authority. All that prevents his fall is the loyalty of the military. He can still rely on the 350,000-strong army for support. For the moment, Defense Minister Abu Hamid straddles the fence. He has assured me he will throw his support to our movement for an Islamic Republic, but only if we win a national referendum without bloodshed. Is that bad? Asked Amar with an innocent expression. Yazid gave him a cold stare. The man is a pro-Western charlatan, too cowardly to give up American aid. All that matters to him are his precious jets, helicopter gunships, and tanks. He fears Egypt will go the way of Iran. The idiot insists on an orderly transition of governments, so loans from world banks and financial aid from America will keep pouring in. He paused, gazing directly into Amar's eyes, as if daring his prize assassin to contradict him again. Amar remained silent. The stifling room began to close in on him. Abu Hamid also demands my promise that Hala Kamil will remain Secretary General of the United Nations, Yazid added. Yet you ordered me to eliminate her, Amar said, curious. Yazid nodded. Yes, I wanted the bitch dead because she is using her position in the UN as a platform to voice her opposition to our movement and turn world opinion against me. Abu Hamid, however, would have slammed the door in my face if she'd been openly assassinated. The reason why I counted on you, Suleiman, to remove her with an unquestionable accident. Regrettably, you failed. You managed to kill everyone on board the aircraft except Kamil. The last words fell like a hammer. Amar's outward calm disintegrated. He looked up at Yazid in blank confusion. She lives? Yazid's eyes went cold. The news broke in Washington less than 1 hour ago. The plane crashed in Greenland. Every UN passenger except Kamil and all but two of the crew were found dead from poison. Poison? Amar murmured skeptically. Our paid sources in the American news media have confirmed the report. What were you thinking of, Suleiman? You assured me the plane was supposed to vanish in the sea. Do they say how it reached Greenland? A flight steward discovered the bodies of the flight crew. With help from a Mexican delegate, he took over the controls and managed to crash land in a fjord on the coast. Kamil might have died from exposure, cutting you off the hook. But an American naval vessel happened to be cruising nearby. They responded almost immediately and saved her life. Amar was stunned. He was not used to failure. He could not imagine how his exactingly conceived plan had gone so far off track. He closed his eyes, seeing the plane clear the summit of the glacier. Almost instantly he gleaned the imponderables, focusing on a piece of the puzzle that didn't fit. Yazid stood quietly for a few moments, then broke Amar's concentration. You realize, of course, I will be accused of this mess. There is no evidence tying me to the disaster or me to you, Amar said firmly. Perhaps, but call it guilt by motive. Speculation and rumor will convict me in the Western news media. I should have you executed. Amar wiped his mind clear and shrugged indifferently. That would be a sad waste. I'm still the best eliminator in the Middle East. And the highest paid. I'm not in the habit of charging for unfinished projects. I would hope not, said Yazid acidly. He abruptly spun and walked toward the hanging carpet. He reached out and pulled it back with his left hand, paused and turned back to Amar. I must prepare my mind for prayer. You may go, Suleiman Aziz Amar. And Hala Kamil, the job is unfinished. I am turning her removal over to Mohammed Ismail. Ismail, Amar grunted. The man is a cretin. He can be trusted. For what, cleaning sewers? Yazid's hard, cold eyes stared at Amar menacingly. Kamil is no longer your concern. Remain here in Egypt near my side. My faithful advisers and I have another project to advance our cause. You will have an opportunity to redeem yourself in the eyes of Allah. Before Yazid could enter the archway, Amar rose to his feet. The Mexican delegate who helped fly the aircraft, was he also poisoned? Yazid turned and shook his head. The report states he was killed in the crash. Then he was gone and the carpet dropped back. Amar settled on the stool again. Slowly the revelation broke through the mists of the enigma. He should have been maddened, but there wasn't the slightest feeling of anger. Instead, an amused smile curled under his mustache. "So there were two of us," he mused aloud to the empty room. "And the other one poisoned the in-flight meal service." Then he shook his head in wonderment. "Poison in the beef Wellington. My God, how quaint!"